DJ Event Planner will change the way you manage and run your business. Streamline all of your procedures and software into one easy-to-manage system. DJ Event Planner, the ultimate online planning tool.
Hey everyone, it's Ron Roos with Ron Roos Presents. I can't even say my own name tonight. That's awful. It is Ron Roos with Ron Roos Presents on DJN TV for another exciting episode. Tonight's special guest is Rick Brewer, one of my good friends, and also he is the owner of a website called Get More Brides, and he also has a sales consulting business as well. I have known Rick for about an hour. I mean, we've kind of
45 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. 45 minutes. We had a call earlier tonight. No, I've actually known Rick for any number of years. And it's funny because before we came on air tonight, I was telling someone how much of my success in sales came from some of the things that I learned from Rick, years ago, about 10 years ago at the MAP DJ conferences in Minnesota. So good evening, Rick. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Ron. And how are you? How's the end of winter treating you in Kansas City?
There is no end of winter here in Kansas City. As a matter of fact, they're talking snow on April Fool's Day. On Easter, they're talking snow, and you do know that means snow on Easter can only mean one thing. That baseball opening day is coming up.
The Royals are playing.
The Royals are supposed to be playing. Their opening day is what, Thursday for the Royals, and you're a Yankees fan, aren't you?
I am. I'm not a devout Yankees fan, but I stand by my Yanks. I'm from New York, so that goes in the blood.
So, do you know when do they open? Do you know? Are they also on Thursday, or do they play Friday, or you don't know?
I think it's this week, isn't it?
I don't know anything about the Yankees, but so see, you can tell that we are real avid baseball fans.
Yeah. Ask me about my kids' games, though.
How's your kids' games?
RJ's playing baseball this year, and he's looking good. He's in good form, and I'm hoping that he's going to take over first base. So
awesome. How old is RJ?
RJ is 11, going to be 12. Allie just got done with basketball. She was one of the tallest on the team, and she got my height, thank heavens. And she absolutely mopped it up. She's ferocious, and I love to watch her play. And then my oldest, Emma, is in the state championship band. And so she's tearing it up as well. So very proud of my kids.
So, wow, your kids got talents, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, they're dedicated, too. They're focused. I love it.
So Rick, tonight we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about how to exceed expectations and actually manage expectations of customers. And before we get too far along here, just a reminder to the people that may be watching us live: if you have questions with anything that Rick and I talk about, go ahead and put them in the chat section. I am looking at that, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you have as they come up. So, Rick, before we get too far along, let's talk a little bit about, I always like to kind of get credentials. Tell me a little bit about yourself. What brought you into sales? What brought you into the wedding business?
You know, I've always been drawn towards selling and making money. My dad was an entrepreneur, and he was always teaching me by example. And I'll take you back way back when I was around 4 years old. He took us on a trip to Nova Scotia, and you know those stands that have all the brochures at the hotels. I went and I would find all the good looking brochures, and I took those back and I sold them each to my friends for a penny each. And then later, a couple of years later, they used to have these pop fizz things that they come in a package of eight in a strip of eight.
Right.
And kind of like a candy flavored Alka-Seltzer type thing. And I'd go buy a package of eight for a quarter, and then I'd take them to school and sell them for a nickel or a dime each, depending on the mood I was in. And so the teacher actually caught me selling those, called my dad, And my dad pulled me over and says, hey, have you been selling these at school? I said, yeah. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. He goes, okay, just don't let the teacher see you. So
so you were a huckster when you were in school.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. And so anyhow, and as I've been in sales now for over 30 years, sales management, sales training, all that stuff. And one thing I love about sales is anybody can become a great salesperson. Now, anybody who tells you I can sell you anything, they're not a salesperson, they're right. A con man. So don't think that you have to have the sale every single time and that you're going to make it every single time, but you can learn from things and you can better yourself. And even this old dog is learning new tricks. So
at what point did you make the turn into the wedding industry?
The wedding industry, I actually broke up with a girlfriend and a friend of mine felt sorry for me because I was sitting home being all sad and forlorn and heartbroken. And he was a DJ and he invited me out to go with him to DJ a school dance. And I just had a ball with it. I thought that that was like one of the funnest things I ever did. And so he turned me over to his friend who was sending out a whole flock of guys out. And he trained me. And back then, this was 1991, 92. I ended up training for, he had this train where we had to go and carry gear and set up and understand all the equipment and everything else for 10 gigs. Then we had to DJ for 10 gigs and we didn't get paid a dime.
Oh, and wow. So
we had to do, that was our training program. And he would come and watch us and they would tell us how to do it and what to do and everything else. But long story short, we had to pay our price to get in. And then I started DJing after that. And so I ended up doing 300 weddings for my short, illustrious career as a wedding DJ. But then I ended
up,
one of the best sources of marketing that I had was a wedding magazine. And I ended up buying a franchise of it and running that, sold that after 4.5 years. I built it up and we sold that. And then went down and set up another magazine in another part of the world and did that. And then I just decided I want to be into consulting because of the fact that I'm running into the same problems with marketing, with sales. And this is one thing that kind of got me is how many people told me, oh, I love what I do, but I don't like to sell. I don't want to be pushy. They kind of felt like, have you ever heard that, Ron? Have you ever heard somebody say?
Actually, I've said it myself,
And I'm telling people if you feel you have to be pushy, you're doing it wrong. That's not sales. That's again, that's some kind of a pressure tactic or something. But selling is not being pushy. Selling is convincing. Selling is teaching. Selling is educating. And you're not always a match for people. But so I found that being around this all the time and giving good advice that worked and helped people, I liked that. So that's when I again reinvented myself.
So what, so all of this was the advent of what is now Get More Brides. Is that correct?
That's correct. And Get More Brides has been around now since, for 9 years. We're rounding up 9 years here in May. And I think we met 9 years in June.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, it's been a while that we've known each other. So I want to go back just a little bit to when you and I first met, because I want to talk a little bit about some of the lessons that I've learned for you. And I'd like for you to share some of that knowledge with the people that are watching the show tonight. And so let's just do it this way. If you could give three top pieces of advice to the people that are viewing tonight, whether they're DJs or just in the wedding industry itself, what three pieces of advice for sales could you give? Would you want to give?
Well, the first thing I tell people about selling, when I'm teaching somebody about selling, I tell them that all sales are mental. It's all in your head.
Right.
It's all up
right
here. So, I mean, it's like, if you hate rejection, if you feel like you either get the sale or you're somehow rejected, then you're not going to like selling. You're not going to like it at all. And so you've got to just go out there and figure out what's the best match and what's best for your prospective client. And so get out of your own head with how you view your sales and how you view your results. Because if you're going out there and you're selling as the salesman and being salesy, you're going to fail a lot more. But if you're getting out there and just building a connection and you're just talking to people, but you're asking them questions, then that's when you can be selling by doing that. I'll randomly just start talking to people and just trying to get to know them. That can be a version of sales. When you're doing improv, you're selling concepts, you're selling ideas, and everybody has to do some version of selling. Now I see my kids and how they sell me on things. Like, for example, if they're in trouble, they'll sell me on how it really wasn't that bad of a thing that they did. Or they'll sell me on how it was perhaps somebody else's fault, or they'll sell me on how the punishment doesn't fit the crime. Everybody sells. Everybody does. It's just the way that we view salesmen. We don't have to be this cheesy, iconic car salesman person, which, again, I mean, I love walking into a sales, into a car dealership. The car dealership where I have my car repaired, I've been thinking about maybe trading up and getting something newer. And they had a thing the other day where you go in and you just fill out the questionnaire and they'll give you a $30 gift card. And you remember how I've talked to you about the idea of just getting the lead in there, because that's where sales happen. They were kind of doing that thing. And so I figured I'd go in, and my kids like the dealership because they have lots of snacks and everything else. So we just took a trip over there, and you walk up to the place and it's like, and you've got two rows of salesmen, and it can be really intimidating at times. You know, you got some guy that's heralding you in and telling you where to park and everything else. And it's like, you feel like you're a lamb going to the slaughter. And I love how some sales situations set you up for that. And the best thing that you can do is get them out of their head too, to where that mental atmosphere is set.
Right.
So if we can understand that selling is mental and everything's up here for us, up there for them. So they don't feel like they're going into this bad situation where they're going to somehow be held down and forced against their will to buy something that they don't want. Then, you know, because you're going to use your mental jujitsu on them, and you're a sales ninja, and you're going to karate chop their wallet. You know, come on, let's just talk. Let's set the boundaries. Let's set the expectations. So,
well, and it's setting the expectations. It's also setting the experience. And I think, you know, it's so much. I've always said, you're never going to drag anyone to your way of thinking. You're never going to drag anyone kicking and screaming to your way of thinking. And that's why, when it comes to sales, I prefer to do it just simply as a, let's have a conversation. You know, I want to learn about you. You can learn about me. I don't ever consider it a waste of my time to sit down and learn about a couple, because there may be some nugget of information I can gather. Even if they don't book me, there may be some nugget of information or something I learn about the process from them that I can carry with me to another sales meeting. But typically what I find is that if you just sit down and talk to people and have a conversation with them, and particularly if you spend at least a little bit of time just trying to get to know as much as you can about that couple or about those people. If you ask about them before you start talking about you, you're going to find that when it comes time to talk about you, they're going to be more willing to listen to you than they were if you were just going to just be like, you know, let me just go ahead and pour all this stuff on you about all the wonderful things I can do for you without even finding out what it is that they want you to do for them. So yeah, I certainly agree with you in that regard.
Well, so what's the number, I guess that leads us right into number two, what I would think, and I'm spitballing here, but number two is selling. Proper selling is relationship building.
Absolutely.
Because of the fact that selling is emotional. I asked you this question before, and I'm going to ask you again. What was the last car that you bought, Ron?
My 2005 Honda Element. In 2005.
That's a good vehicle. But why did you buy that?
Because it fit my need as far as being able to, here's the truth. I'll keep it real short. I had a huge big red Dodge Ram van that I was using for hauling equipment, but I was still multi-op at the time. So I had actually gone from multi-op. I chose to just start being a single operator. And so I didn't need this huge van anymore, but I still needed a vehicle that I could haul equipment around in. And it worked out, the Honda Element was perfect. I can fit my Bose sound system into this Honda Element, along with everything else I need to do an event. And I still have a little bit of room to spare, not a lot, but by the time I take out all the seats, I have the room I need to spare. So that's why, that and the gas mileage.
Right. Okay. So when you're buying a car, what color did you get?
I got black.
You got black.
But mainly because that was the only one that was on the lot. I wanted a red one, but they gave me a better deal on the black one because, and it has all-wheel drive, because that was the only one they had on the lot.
Okay. Well, there's so many different decisions that went into buying that car. You got so many extra things out of that vehicle.
Sure.
You could have gotten cheaper. You could have gotten used. You could have gotten a different color. You could have gotten all these different things. But somehow you emotionally connected with that vehicle. And that's, I mean, it's like when you're selling most of your, unless you're selling gas where somebody drives up, pays at the pump, and they pump their gas, you're selling emotion. You're not selling a commodity. And due to that, I mean, you've got to keep that in mind. So build the relationship if you want to sell emotion. Don't try selling logically doesn't make sense.
Well, people want to hang out with other people that they trust and they like. You know, if they don't like you, if you haven't built that emotion and they don't like you, you can be the best DJ in the world, or you can be the best at anything that you do in the world. But if people don't like you, if you have an attitude, it's not going to pay off in the end.
Right, right. And you've seen some people that are actually savant-like in their intelligence, but their personality is refrigerator-like. You know the type that I'm talking about. Nobody specific, but it's like there's just some people that they just don't know how to connect with other people because they're so inward and they're not outward. And so getting into people and building relationships, learning human behaviors, psychology is one of my most fascinated things. Why people do what they do, why they think what they think, and why they go in the direction that they go is fascinating to me. And human behavior is really, that can really help you as far as becoming a great salesman.
So what's the third thing you want to, what's the third thing you want to teach people? You all right?
Yeah, excuse me. Allergies. It's not contagious, I promise.
Okay, good. Because
I guess the third most important thing would be that it's a stepped process, that you've got steps A through Z. Don't try to sell step Z before you're still on step C type thing. For example, and we talked about expectations a minute ago. If you start talking about the idea of I really have gotten into these gold mining TV shows. Have you ever seen any of those? The reality shows are about Gold Rush or Barents Sea Gold. And they follow a process of finding, of mining, and of refining. If you start trying to refine the wrong dirt, then you're going to be spinning your wheels. You're going to be burning a lot of diesel fuel with your machinery trying to get that raw dirt up there. And the people who know how to do this and who know how to find millions, they know what to look for and they know how to find the right place. Then they know how to mine it up to where then they can take it over to the refinery and put it through a process. And so it's the same thing in your sales. It's a stepped process to where you've got to build the expectations into the process. You also have to find out what their needs are before you start selling them on what you can provide, and so on and so forth. I don't want to go through the whole sales process, but if you do it out of step, then that's typically why you lose a sale, because they get confused. And when the human mind shuts down, then it can't make a decision.
Well, or as I've heard it said, you're actually trying to explain to them how sausage is made. You know, right. rather than just allowing them to enjoy how the sausage itself tastes, rather than having to go through the whole process of this is how we make the sausage.
Right. So, old school thinking is sell the sizzle, not sell the steak, because the sizzle, the aroma, and the feeling that you're going to get with that beautiful ribeye. That's what you're selling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I like ribeye. It's one of my favorites. So now you're making me hungry, Rick. One of the things I really want to talk about that gets very little consideration, we're going to talk about exceeding expectations here in a minute, but I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago for Disc Jockey News about setting expectations, managing expectations. And I think that's an area where a lot of people in business, it doesn't really matter what business they're in. I think that's where a lot of businesses get caught up in situations with customers where the customer may turn out to be extremely unhappy because they were expecting one thing but they actually were delivered something else. They had their own preconceived idea of exactly what it is that they were supposed to be getting, when in fact what you're offering was something totally different. I think a lot of people get hung up on that. So I think going back a little bit on the sales process that you were talking about, I think one of the things that's extremely important, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I believe one of the things that's extremely important to do during the process, during that sales process, when you actually get into talking about what it is you do and what they can expect, to being able to actually lay out for the customer that this is how the process works. For me, as an example, if you contract me as a wedding DJ, the process for me starts 3 months in advance of your event. That's kind of like a getting to know you, an occasion where we're just going to sit down and talk about the two of you. Second meeting we have is actually going to be the planning process, where we actually lay a timeline out for everything that it is that you want to do. Third time we get together is to go to the venue, do a walkthrough, and try to wrap up loose ends. And throughout this process, I'm telling them also about I show them through a checklist exactly all the things that we're going to talk about in each one of those meetings, so they're prepared when they arrive at those meetings, and they've been able to get their homework complete as well. In essence, what I'm saying is that I look at, and I've said this 100 times and I'll say it 100 times more, I look at a client or a customer is not so much a client or a customer as I do as looking at them as a creative partner. I believe that a highly successful event is actually a two-way street, not a one-way street. Without the information that a client provides to me, or my creative partner provides to me, or to any other DJ or any other wedding vendor, we're unable to produce a uniquely imaginative personal event for them. Am I making sense here? I just want to. Right. Do you agree?
I would ask you: do you even go so far as to connect with the other vendors?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the fact that you guys work together as a team, and when you guys score a touchdown, the bride wins.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so.
And actually, I think that's, you know, that, as I said, I think, and the reason I make a big deal out of the creative partners, I think I'm also a big believer that words mean something. And I believe that by calling them or referring to them, I should say, as my creative partner, in a way, without really having to say it out loud, I'm saying to them that I am just as invested in the success of your event as you are, as your creative partner.
Well, and you bring up a point. Let me ask you this question, Ron. Do you use online technology to plan their wedding, or do you use the old fashioned face-to-face?
I'm old fashioned. There's another area that I don't. I believe that when you're working on a wedding, which is a highly personal event, it's a highly personalized event. It's a once in a lifetime. I don't think that you can do the personal work. You can make it that as personal using online technology as you can in actually developing relationships with people. I think where a lot of some of my clients from customer experience that I work with and helping them design better customer experiences for their clients, one of the things that we talk about is that how you can't just rely on the technology to help you do their event. You still have to have a connection, because what happens if you make an error? Pardon me?
Oh, well, and I'm going to point out the difference between something like DJ Event Planner that keeps track of everything for you and, right, and runs your life. I mean, I fully concur that measuring is managing. And if you don't, right, measure it, you don't manage it. But I'm talking about taking away the personal spot. And I think that that's what you're speaking of, Drew.
Right, right. Well, and I'm not taking away. Look, the reality is, for some people, using online technology works for them. If that's what you want to do, then that's what you want to do. But I think that you can be far more successful at what you do and make far more money at what you do. I mean, I've always been hesitant to talk about money, but the reality is if you want to make far more money at what you do and get far more referrals at what you do, and you want to have people who want to come back and experience from you again and again and again, then there has to be an extraordinary personal connection with these individuals. That can't happen on any online technology. Look, if online technology were emotional, instead of swiping left and swiping right on Tinder and then eventually setting up a date, you swipe left and swipe right on Tinder and then you hit, and then all of a sudden you're engaged and you get married. I mean, there still has to be an emotional connection between the people that are connecting on Tinder. I'm just making that one up as I go along here, but that's truthful. I mean, it's the way it is.
I think it's actually called Tinder, not Tender.
What did I say?
Tender.
Well, I'm not single, so
Tender might be your objective.
But you get my point, right? I mean, there has to be, if you want to make more money, then you have to be able to make emotional connections. If you're not willing to make emotional connections, then you're going to be stuck at where you are for a very long time.
I saw this great video one time of a guy driving this beautiful, brand new, top of the line BMW. And right, he says, this is a great vehicle. But if you like great vehicles, and he parks it and he goes in the garage, opens up the door and drives out a Rolls Royce Phantom. He says, this is a great vehicle. And what's the difference between this one and this one? And he says, it's quite a bit of money. And it's like, if you want to get that quite a bit of money, you've got to convince people that it's worth it. And right, so, and that's what I think we're talking about. And that's part of the selling process. It's part of the storytelling process. If you get good at storytelling, if you get good at explaining to them what their needs are, understanding what their needs are, so that you can explain to them in a story fashion about, you ever have a bride who she's dancing that first dance with dad, and then on comes his voice, because you went to this awesome workshop by Peter Mary and he taught you how to blend in the dad's voice talking about his special memories about his little girl. And then she starts, the tear rolls down her cheek. It's like, I've heard of people that they book on the spot because they tell a great story like that. And that's selling, Ron. That's what selling is. It's great storytelling. But you've got to know your people before you can start telling them stories about other random people that don't matter to them.
Yeah, I mean, trying to create, and it's funny you brought that up, because I'm doing a presentation at the AFWPI conference coming up in April in Sacramento. By the way, if any of you all watching have not signed up or in Northern California, make sure you do that. But my presentation is on creativity. But one of the things I talk about in that presentation is that it's extremely difficult to do something uniquely imaginative for an individual you know very little about. It's as hard to do that as it is to paint a beautiful portrait of someone that you've only seen at a glance. It's just, you're, neither one of those is going to be a truly reflective image of that couple. It's just not going to happen. So,
the expectations process is one of the ones that it makes my job easy as a coach, because people they skip out of it so easily. But when you set those expectations, I don't know if I told you about this, Ron, but I was writing a book last year called Easily Exceed Your Expectations. And it was driven towards the restaurant industry, because early in my career, I started selling food to restaurants through a broadline distributor, and I loved it. I love restaurants. And so I've always been fascinated towards the business of restaurants. And so I I did a study of a customer service study, if you will, of the top 100 national restaurant chains. And what's interesting is that less than 10 of them met the expectations that people, I did a study of the restaurants and how they responded to customer complaints, the top 100, the big boys. And then I did a study of 1,000 people and what they wanted when they had a bad experience. And less than 10 met the expectations or exceeded them. Now, wow. Five of them really knocked it out of the park. And kudos to two restaurants, Olive Garden and Outback Steakhouse. Chick-fil-A, they did fine, but it's like they didn't really knock it out of the park. But everybody, you know, I just said, who's the best? That was just one of my, you know how you get the questionnaires and you got too many. So one of my questions was, who's the worst, who's the best? McDonald's actually did really well. Now, the problem with it is that they're responding on a corporate basis, but you're having the customer experience on a local basis. And it's hard to expand and hard to train and hard to training is a continual process in my mind's eye. So my point is not to talk about restaurants so much as it is about what the expectations were. But these restaurants did not meet what expectations, and these were very broad-based general questions that based on what they said, giving them a numerical value on how they responded and exceeding that score, only 10. So
what were some of your criteria in measuring these expectations? Tell me, like, what factored into your expectations? Was it cleanliness, food quality?
No, I just went off of service alone. I didn't do anything other than service because food quality was an automatic, I'm going to give you some stuff. And I didn't want to do that. You know, it's like, because seriously, I've talked to people in the restaurant business and they say people come in expecting a free meal by eating everything and then complaining about it at the last minute. And they come up with the weirdest, strangest complaints. I had a friend who was a general manager at an Applebee's, and he would tell me that people did that on a constant, consistent basis just to get a free meal. And so I didn't want to do it on the food quality. I wanted to do it on the server was less than nice. In fact, they were somewhat rude. They wouldn't listen to me. And just based on a very general emotional feeling. And then the questions that I asked were for the consumer side of it on what they expected in return when they had it. I asked them, what would you expect if you had a bad experience? And only like, I want to say 5 or 8% said that they won. My computer crashed. And so I lost all my data. So I'm guessing at these numbers. I'm not just pulling these out of thin air. These are real numbers that happened. But they said that they wanted some kind of a refund and a bonus. So when people overall would be fine with an apology from the management, a sincere apology from the management. And so, and I'll tell you, the other day I went to Long John Silver's because they have a new thing, Taco Tuesday. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Okay. And so they make these fish tacos and they charge $1 a taco. They're not bad, actually. I kind of like them. Don't make fun of me or anything. But I mean, it's like I ordered a couple of them to eat on the run. And then I went and sat down, waited for them. And the nice girl comes up and says, I'm sorry, honey, it took us so long. I put an extra one in there for you, and I hope you come back. I was wowed. I really was wowed. She wasn't a manager or anything, but she did it right. And that's what we want. Conversely, I went to Wendy's for the double stack for $1 each, and I got a bunch of them for my kids. And it's like the lady was about pissed off because I ordered 4 of them. And it's like, I wasn't ordering. That's not a lot. There were guys that were coming in there ordering more. But it's like, have a nice day with a big puss on her face, you know? And it's like, give me a break. And so, I mean, we just want to be treated decently. Now, when somebody's spending good money on a wedding for entertainment that they've never spent before, they're spending more money on the one day than they'll ever spend again on a day in their life. And they've never bought this stuff before. They're a little bit wigged out. So when we treat them kindly and we treat them nicely and we want to know their story, then Yeah, that goes a long way.
Well, and I mean, you were talking, I think people like, and that, people like it if you can just a little simple act of generosity or a simple act of not necessarily generosity, but gratitude, just being able to offer them something to say, hey, thank you. This was very nice of you. Or when I go to you, it's funny, you were talking about somebody throwing in an extra taco into the bag. When I go to Panera Bread, I meet couples at Panera Bread to talk about their events. And I usually will get there first and I'll go and I'll get myself a cup of coffee. And nine times out of 10 at Panera Bread, if all I order is a cup of coffee, they go, here, just take it. They're not going to even ring it up, which really kind of ticks me up because I don't get the points when they do that. Because goes on my Panera. Goes on my Panera. Say, could you still just give me the points? That's all I really want.
Yeah. Give me their points. They don't.
Because eventually, eventually I'm going to get one of those big cookies. But no kidding. But and when a couple walks in, I mean, if you, as silly as it sounds, it's I forget who I learned this from at a conference. It's amazing stuff you learn at a conference. But somebody from a suggestion I learned years ago at a conference, when a couple walks in, I will stand up and greet them, and then I will always say, "Let me go get you something. What would you like?" Rather than saying, you know, "Would you like something?" Because they're always going to say no. Instead, offering to go ahead and go get it. It's not a big deal. I mean, that's not, but it's just a generous offer to go do something. They're giving of their time to you, to meet with you, to talk about something extremely important to them. And this is just a simple way of saying, thank you for taking the time to do that. And I think the other thing here is that the other lesson to be learned here, and something that I'm starting to speak more on, is that if you make a mistake, own it, for crying out. Like, you know, when you're talking about these restaurants that, you know, they don't really want to, they don't see their responsibility in all this. If you're making an honest mistake, then just own it and don't wait. This is the thing that irritates me the most with people I do business with. Don't wait for someone. Don't wait and force them to have to contact you about a problem before you contact them. Deb and I are having new doors put in, and patio doors, and just they were supposed to be installed five weeks ago last Friday. And when they came, they did our front doors. They got that done, the front windows, and they did some other windows. When they went to do the patio door was 4 inches too wide. Okay. So they said, fortunately, God, we got lucky, because these construction guys came in and they just start tearing stuff out. So lucky that they didn't tear out the back door before they found all of this out. But in the meantime, they took off all the trim. They damaged it. They instead of removing the screen door that was out there, I guess they figured they were just going to be tearing it out anyway. So they just yanked the screen out so we can't use it. So when they did this, they said it will be 5 weeks before we can get a new door. Okay, I understand. Mistakes happen. So then somebody called me from install last week. Last week was 5 weeks, and said, oh, we want to go ahead and set up your install for April 14th. That's 9 weeks from the day that they were originally supposed to install. Not one person from their company called to say, you know what, we were wrong in that five-week estimate. And we're sorry. You know, is there anything we can do? I mean, there was nothing. And I came to a point where I had to call them to get a hold of a boss there and say, this isn't right.
And yeah. So if you politely ignore the problem, it magically goes away.
Yeah. I mean, it took a great experience, because the sales experience was awesome. The first experience of all the install was awesome. This one thing screwed up the entire experience. And right. And if they're looking for a 5-star review from me, it ain't going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So we have about 5 minutes left. So I don't want to run too awfully long here. So what other suggestions would you offer as far as anyone in this industry might be able to do to exceed expectations?
Well, number one, find out what their expectations are.
Right.
First and foremost, mm-hmm. you know, one of the one of the techniques, and I'm not a big, huge technique guy, and I certainly don't want to teach you to do something that is comes natural to me, but might be unnatural to you, because you've got to be natural.
Right.
Because it comes off as salesy if you don't.
Yeah.
But the first thing as I would do is when they agreed to go with me, as I'd say, I turn the contract over on a blank side of the paper and say, tell me some of the things that you expect that I'm going to do now. And they only usually, well, you're going to show up and you're going to play some music and we're going to have a good time. And it's like, right. But we also talked, I'm going to be there at this time. I usually set up X amount early so that you don't have to worry. We also talked about a planning session. We also talked about this. If I do all these things, will you be happy? And I'll be thrilled. Great. If you're happy, and only if you're happy, would it be all right if I asked you for a referral after that? Anybody that you might know who's getting married, be happy to. Never had a bride tell me no to that. But here's the fun part, is once you know everything that you're going to do anyhow, mm-hmm. you're already going to wow them. Now, the normal stuff that you do wows them, so you only have to tweak it just a little bit to go above and beyond. I mean, what's something that's free that you can do as a DJ that would just put a tear in her eye, Ron?
Absolutely. It depends. I mean, every
dance
couple.
Dance with grandma, a special dedication yeah. to this person, having fun with her bridesmaid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Memory, 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 memory. The whole point of a wedding is the memories, is the experience. And once you start getting on there, this is all Peter Mary stuff. This is all Bill Herman stuff. This is the stuff that when you start doing it and you start doing it well, then man, winner, winner, chicken dinner. This is what you teach. You're amazing. And you're going to teach the same thing to anybody who signs up for your course in Sacramento. And I'm telling you, hello to my friends in Sacramento. Are you going to San Francisco, by the way?
Yeah, I'm actually doing, I'm glad you brought this up, Rick. And this wasn't planned at all, was it? I'm doing a presentation at the AFWPI on creativity. It's the one I did at Wedding MBA just this past October. I'm doing
my friend Richard Markell, Richard and Julia. Hello, if you're watching.
And then I'm doing a workshop on client experience. It's called Client Experience Demystified. That's happening on Wednesday, the 11th. I'm speaking on the 10th of April. And then I'm doing two improv workshops, one with the Sacramento ADJA on the 10th and one with the Bay Area ADJA on the 11th. So I'm going to be pretty busy while I'm there, but I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I hope that everything I do exceeds our expectations. Pardon me?
It's my second favorite city in the world, San Francisco.
Really? Yeah. Well, and you are like my first favorite salesperson in the world. So that kind of worked out well. So, Rick, before we go, just throwing this out there, see if you can do it. You got one last sage word of advice regarding sales, life, things in general. Anything you want to say?
Right. Don't be afraid to fail. Go out there and fail, 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 because you can either learn or you can be miserable and not learn. But when you fail, that's what's going to teach you the best. And failure is our best instructor. And that's what's going to lift you up there higher. So don't be afraid if you lose the sale. You didn't Absolutely. Lose the sale, because you only lose the sales that call in afterwards, want their refund of their deposit, tear up the contract. Those are lost sales. If you didn't get the sale, you never lost the sale. You never gained that sale. So don't be afraid to fail.
And Rick, I know you offer sales consulting. So if anybody wants some extra help with improving on their sales process and other things that they may be having issues with within their business, how can they reach you?
You can feel free to give me a call. My phone number is all over my website at weddingbusinessmarketing.com. You can email me, rick@getmorebrides.com. You can call Ron. He has me on the
speed dial.
Yeah. So, you can light up the bat signal. I'm all out there and happy to talk to you. And, first chat's always, gratis. We don't charge for that, because I want to find out if we have a match, because I've had people come to me, they say, Rick, my business is failing and it's going to go under if I don't get three sales in the next week. You know, I can't help you there. And anybody who does say that they can help you usually can't. And so, I mean, it's like, I just want to get to know you and find out what you're looking for, find out what your expectations are before I'm going to talk to you, send you a bill for anything. So, reach out and let's chat.
Awesome. Well, Rick, thank you so much for being a guest. I appreciate it. I love having you on the show, and I'm sure I'm going to have you back sometime in the very near future so we can go a little bit further and deeper into this whole sales process, because it's still a mystery to a lot of people. And I know it's not something that a sales process, like anything else, is something that not only have to give up the fear of failure, but you also have to practice at it just like you do at anything else as well. Something that we didn't really get a chance to talk about. I'm going to be back with another Ron Ruth Presents on the last Tuesday of the month, which I was looking away, is April the 24th. So I expect to see everyone who's watching right now to come back right here live on Tuesday evening, April 24th at 8:00 Eastern time. In the meantime, have a wonderful Easter holiday and go Royals. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Ron.
Tonight's DJ and TV show is sponsored in part by Electro Voice, DJ Event Planner, ADJ, NLFX Professional, Promo Only, Newmark, and DJ and TV Insiders.